Well, I actually met him in Memphis. To be honest, I didn't know a whole lot about him at that time. It was Jeff Simon, George Thurgood's drummer, that introduced me to him. So I went up to my hotel room that night and Googled him and started realizing, man, this guy's got crazy producing credits, but also a crazy songwriter who's done songs for Rascal Flatts, Lynyrd Skynyrd, and tons of huge bands. So when I connected with him, I said, hey, you know, do you want to work together? And he said, you wanted to? And I said, well, here's the issue. You know, I have a bunch of songs, but, you know, a bunch of them aren't finished. So what do we do? He said, man, I'll help you out and we'll finish all those songs and we'll get them done. And that's one of the great things about the record is that he was a co-writer on many of the songs.
You know, what did he add for your songs? Are they a little bit different than they normally would have been?
Absolutely. I mean, some of the arrangements, for one thing, I mean, lyrically, he's a genius. I don't consider myself the greatest songwriter. I mean, I've written some okay songs, but it's kind of like a lifetime process. And he's just got way more experience and better ideas. You know, I mean, I'm a guitar player and I sing and that's my thing. He just dug a little deeper into some of these stories. You know, one song, for example, Cocaine Boy, is one where I really didn't know how to approach that as a song. I had ideas for it, and it was, you know, a highly personal topic, and I said, you know, how do we work this? And he brought it to life.
Turned 19 the other day. Doing rehab down in Texas. Tired of cleaning up after all. Truth buried deep. I got scars nobody can see.
You know, it's a true story about my childhood, and basically, it's something I was never really comfortable with sharing until now. And as an artist, too, I thought, okay, well, this is time to share and time to finally get that out there. So I told him the whole story and all the lyrics I had written and like a riff I had come up with. And I said, what do we do with this? And he said, that's a song we will create in the studio. And I thought, okay, sounds good. So I cut the track and, you know, the whole band was in on it. We played for like 8 minutes or 9 minutes just on one riff. He goes, okay, that's done. I said, okay, great. Now, what about the lyrics? He said, we'll worry about that in a couple of days. So a few days later, we just wrote it together in the studio and it came to life in the strangest way that I've ever seen a song come to life.
Was it a hard song for you to do?
It would have been harder 3 years ago or 4 years ago, but a few times I have to admit, listening back to it after it's been recorded, I listen to it and there's some couple little lines in that are like, wow, I can't believe those are actually on my record.
Well, let's talk about another song that you wrote with Tom on this album. It's Blue Jean Jacket. It's a little lighter than the Cocaine Boy song. It's a little more carefree. Are you an old Blue Jean Jacket guy, or how did that song come about?
Yeah, I am, absolutely. It's I kind of started the song about a girl that I had a crush on back in my, you know, in like grade 9 and 10 type of years.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I did have a Blue Jean Jacket that I would go around and have it signed by all the blues guys. So I had like little Charlie Beatty and Carrie Bell and all these cool blues artists signed my jacket, and I still have the thing, and I was going through my closet one day and I saw it and I was like, oh man, that thing, I can't believe it's still around. And then I thought of all the cool times I had with it, and then I thought, hey, this is a song, and it's, like you said, it's a nice light topic, and Tom brought it to life too. That's another one where he just came up with some great lines that brought it to life.
Car show Sundays and Monday movie nights. Wait until Friday to see you walking by. Arcade shooting pool, walking you home from school. My blue jean jacket, man, I sure felt cool in my blue jean jacket. I felt like I could take on the world. Well, those threads of mine felt so fine when I was holding.
J.W., last time we talked, I think we talked about blues in general and, you know, what is blues, what isn't blues. There's another article making the rounds on Facebook, young blues fans, and how they're not being attracted. Well, they're not really a whole lot of young blues fans. And you consider yourself a blues artist, but you also, I think, consider yourself more than a blues artist. How do you handle the whole thing about there's hardly any young blues artists? What is blues? How do you attract people to blues?
Well, you know, my perspective has changed a lot over the years. I mean, even if you go back through our interviews, maybe you'll hear my perspective change. But in the beginning, I was a pretty hardcore purist. I wanted to record things the way they were done back in the day, and I wanted to go for that Chicago sound or the Texas sound or whatever I was going for at the time. And I'm really happy with those records and the way they went. And now I'm kind of at a point where it's like, okay, I've recorded a lot of Chicago shuffles. You know, I don't necessarily need to record anymore because I don't think I, as an artist, am bringing anything new to the table in the blues world when I do that. So my perspective is, it's blues if it's rooted in blues and doesn't sound too far off. I mean, there's definitely a point where it's no longer blues anymore. Now it's like straight up rock, or it's straight up, you know, country. Or I mean, there's a song on my record, the new one called If It Feels This Good Tomorrow, that Tom wrote, and that's not a blues song. It's absolutely not a blues song, but it's on a blues record, and it was put in there just to kind of give it a little twist.
If we both wake up dreaming, we don't want the dream to end. Ready to face the day together, over and over again. We can take this ride as far as it can go. If it feels this good tomorrow.
But when it comes to younger people listening to blues, I think the biggest concern has always been the same, is that they're not being exposed to it. And when they are exposed to it, they fall in love with it. So being a younger guy out there touring, I see people all the time, you know, young kids or girls or whatever, you know, 19, 20, 21, and they say, this is blues? I didn't know this was blues. I love this. And that's like, great. So then we just converted three more people.
We hear a lot of people who maybe say we should get away from even mentioning that these are blues. I mean, do you still consider yourself a blues artist? Do you have any problem saying, yeah, I'm J.W. Jones and I play blues?
I don't have a problem with it because I'm comfortable with it. There are some bands and artists I've run into that, yeah, like you say, they avoid saying that name. But then you know what these guys do is they go and play at blues festivals. And then they play at blues events. And then they want their record reviewed in blues magazines and blues publications. They want to be on blues radio, but they don't want to be called a blues band. It's like they've got some idea in their mind that they have some kind of bigger thing on the horizon, like they're going to become the next big rock band or pop band. Like, to me, that's just not very realistic. I'm a realistic guy when it comes to this stuff and the business, and I play blues.
All right, our guest is J.W. Jones. This is GLT's Talking Blues. Well, you mentioned you're going to cut down on the number of shuffles that you've done since a long time ago, but you do reference Magic Sam on the album, and I think it's just a beautiful, great song, the Magic West Side Boogie. It's an instrumental on the album. Was that your idea, or did Tom kind of push you in that direction, or how did that turn out?
Well, that's a really funny one because we did not plan on recording it. And we were in the studio and Tom said, hey, I saw that thing you did, that West Side Magic Sam thing. Let's do that right now. And I was lucky because we were cutting with my own touring band at that time, Laura Greenberg on bass, Jamie Holmes on drums. And I said, really? We're doing this? He goes, yeah, man, it's a killer track. Let's just do it. And then if we use it, we use it. And so we cut it. And, you know, it's become one of the favorites on the album, I think, because it was just like so raw and so real, and we just cut it right then and there. I guess I should say one other thing about how you introed that is that, you know, I've cut down on the idea of recording certain traditional blues songs when it comes to recording, but when you see us live, we play tons of that stuff live, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'll be doing Eddie Taylor and John Lee Hooker, and I mean, I love playing it. That's where my heart and soul is.
So the difference is recording and live. You've recorded.
Exactly.
Okay, I see. That's cool. No, that's cool. Well, I love this song. I love the way, like you said, once you get a third of the way into this thing, I mean, it just starts tearing you up. It's great. The album is Belmont Boulevard. It's J.W. Jones on GLT's Talking Blues. Thanks, J.W.
Thank you.